Hey, what's going on, good people? Hope everybody is having a beautiful hump day. The sun is shining, the birds are chirping. It's a great day, a little chilly, but hope you guys are enjoying it. We have a jam-packed show for you all today, as we do each and every day. On today's show, we'll be talking a little spring football as the Michigan State football team prepares for the spring game, which will be taking place this Saturday at 2 p.m. And I tell you what, Antonio was challenging all of the green and white to come on out down to Spartan Stadium. He has a goal of more than 50,000 Spartan fans to attend Saturday's spring game. That's his goal. He's setting the bar pretty high. And, hopefully everybody can come out. It's going to be a great time there. It should be good weather. So we'll talk about spring football. You get to hear from Mark D'Antonio as, he talks about his player personnel and talks about some moves that he has shifted around in light of the spring game just to try and see some different lineups here and there. So, I went out to practice, and you'll get to hear Coach D'Antonio address the media as to his expectations and to, a few players as far as leadership goes on the team. You get to hear that during the third segment of today's show, so you don't want to miss that. We will also be talking a little Wings and Bruins as the Boston Bruins. Yeah, they look like the Boston Bruins last night, folks. They took the lead. They took the lead on the Red Wings. We'll talk about that and dive into what went wrong for the Wings and what went right for the Boston Bruins. And Ndamukong Suh is not in camp, folks. Yeah, we'll talk about that and so much more. We are going to take your calls throughout this entire hour. If you want to call in and weigh in on anything we discuss, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You know, today's show, each and every day we highlight a certain special segment here on the show, and every Wednesday we go at it with a segment called Barbershop Wednesday, where, when you try to go into barbershop, there's always a sports debate. Everybody thinks they're a sports expert when you walk in the barbershop to try and get a cut. So, we definitely dubbed it Barbershop Wednesday for that matter. And today's Barbershop Wednesday debate topic has to do with the game of basketball and the D-League, the developmental league that the NBA has put in place for players who possibly don't want to make that jump from, high school to the college ranks and want to try their hand at the pros to possibly do so in the D-League, or for those who have made that jump from colleges to the NBA, those who have made that leap and just really haven't cut the mustard and can't make the starting squad, they get dropped down to the D-League. Is the D-League, basically, what we're going to debate on is if the D-League is hurting basketball in any way. If you want to weigh on it, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527, is the developmental league hurting the game of basketball? And speaking of the game of basketball, something that really I just don't get, me being a huge NBA guy, I'm following this story about the New York Knicks. Of course, the New York Knicks have certainly been a shell of themselves from dating all the way back. I mean, the Knicks haven't been relevant since the 90s here, ladies and gents. I mean, we all know those days. I mean, and even then, I mean, they still couldn't win a championship due to the Jordan era. Air Jordan certainly blocked that from happening many, many times. But, they're still a storied franchise and pretty beloved in the basketball world, just due to the rich history that they had, dating back to the 80s and 70s. I mean, they were a really, really good team back then. And really, a lot of people look at the New York Knicks and just New York in general as the mecca of basketball, with the squad being in such the dumps right now. They've certainly made a pretty interesting move in hiring Phil Jackson, a man who has certainly had an unbelievable track record of success when you talk about the game of basketball. And Phil was hired as the Knicks' president. And, Phil came in and, we talked about it here on Current Sports, and he actually fired and let go head coach Mike Woodson and his entire coaching staff, trying to bring about a new culture of winning, just to try to rebuild this franchise. But it's interesting to me, if you haven't followed this story, owner James Dolan, who is the owner of the New York Knicks, he doesn't want Jackson to fire certain personnel. I just don't get this story. Now, this is coming straight from CBSSports.com. Quote, just 1 month into his role as Knicks president, Jackson has already clashed with Dolan, the chairman of Madison Square Garden, over personnel decisions. The Daily News has learned that. It's reporting from the Daily News. Now, according to a team source, Jackson is looking to remove several staff members, which is commonplace when a new administration takes over. We all know that. But Dolan opposes removing certain employees. So the two are already bumping heads here, folks. You bring in, I just don't get how you bring in a Hall of Fame coach like Phil Jackson, who has rings up the woozah. I mean, the man knows championships. He's been there, done that before. Coach arguably the greatest basketball player to ever play in the game. Coach to the likes of that of Kobe Bryant and Shaquille O'Neal. I mean, he knows how to win. So you bring in a legend like Phil, and you won't let him do his job. I just don't get that. It really, really puzzles me there. But that is one of those stories you just have you just shake your head and say, really? Really, dude? I really don't get that. So, again, already, and Phil has only had the job for a little over a month now and is already clashing with the owner. Hey, if you're not going to let the great Phil Jackson do his job, I mean, who will you let do your job? I just don't get it. So, there you have that. That story just really, really interesting stuff there. Hopefully the Knicks become relevant soon, because I always said that when the Knicks are good, you know, kind of like the Lakers. When the Knicks and Lakers and Celtics are good, the entire NBA is good. So, I don't know, just really puzzling stuff there. All right, well, let's dive in. Let's waste no more time. Let's dive into your current sports quick hit headliners for this April 23rd, 2014. Michigan State, they will be under the lights in mid-November. The Michigan State football team, that is, next season, playing against one of the league's newly acquired teams. MSU and Maryland will kick off at 8 p.m. November 15th. Mark your calendars at Byrd Stadium in College Park, Maryland, on the Big Ten Network. Now, the Big Ten announced six primetime games today, and the MSU-Maryland game is its first outdoor November telecast at night. Now, the league previously avoided night games in November, but that's no longer the case, and MSU's November 8th home game against Ohio State could still end up under the lights. Now, ESPN has yet to make all of its selections for the 2014 season. The Big Ten and Rose Bowl champion Spartans will play in primetime at least two other times in the fall. MSU's season opener against Jacksonville State on August 29th at Spartan Stadium is a Friday night game with time and television to be announced. So beware of that. And MSU's October 4th home game against Nebraska will kick off at 8 p.m. and will be televised on either ABC, ESPN, or ESPN2. So national attention certainly right on this MSU football team with, you know, a few night games here and there, nationally televised night games, that is. And it should be exciting time for Spartan Nation as this season kicks off. And a lot of expectations now with them coming off a Rose Bowl season. And you'll get to hear my sat down with Mark D'Antonio last week to give us a preview of where the expectations lie for this upcoming season. We talked about leadership roles on the team now, as Connor Cook now, you know, really matures into that second season role. Now, this will be his first time having a full season as MSU starting QB. We'll talk about Connor Cook as, you know, he transitions into that leadership role. And just the overall pressure now in the spotlight and how this MSU football team is dealing with the success that it is currently having. Now, you'll get to hear that sit down this Friday right here on Current Sports Radio at 1 o'clock. You do not want to miss that. Insightful, to say the least. Antonio, a great guy, too. You know, he was in a very, very happy mood when I sat down with him. And, you know, and why wouldn't you be? You just run a Rose Bowl, right? So, again, that's Friday at 1 p.m. right here on Current Sports Radio. And, all right, this is not shocking news for Julius Randle, of course, who had an outstanding season freshman year with Kentucky. He is leaving after one season to enter the NBA draft, where he is expected to be among the top five selections. Now, with 5 days left before the deadline, that being Sunday, for underclassmen to declare, the 6'9" Dallas native announced the decision many expected even before he arrived as part of Kentucky's best ever recruiting class. Now, projected as a lottery pick again from the outset, Randle solidified his draft stock by leading Kentucky to the NCAA final behind a string of double-doubles despite being doubled and triple-teamed. He was certainly a man. No surprise, though, that he will be taking his talents to the next level. So we'll see where he'll end up. I'm sure he'll be a top five or definitely, without a doubt, top 10 pick. So he definitely made the right decision in that regard. All right, and the Boston Bruins, they took full advantage of Detroit's mistakes and their stellar goaltender's flawless performance. Dougie Hamilton and Jordan Caron, they scored in the first period after the Red Wings had miscues on the ice, and Tuukka Rask, he finished with a 23-save shutout, giving Boston a 3-0 win over the Red Wings and a 2-1 series lead in their first-round series. Now, the President's Trophy-winning Bruins are ahead in the series for the first time, and it seems like a commanding lead the way they have handled themselves these past two games. We're going to dive into last night's game, really dissect what went wrong for the Wings and what went right for the Boston Bruins. The Boston really, really looked good last night. Again, if you want to call in and give your thoughts on that game and the Wings' playoff chances heading forward now, as Boston now has a 2-1 series lead, you can do so by picking up that phone, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. And the Detroit Tigers were also in action yesterday. The Tigers finally saw their franchise player get going, and after a scare from the bullpen, they head on for a 8-6 win over the Chicago White Sox. Miguel Cabrera's 3 hits and 3 RBIs. It really just sprung the Tigers' offense, and his 2-run homer in the third was part of their 5-run third inning. Now, with a 5-run lead heading into the ninth, the Tigers' bullpen made things a little interesting. Adam Dunn hit a homer off of Phil Koch, part of a 3-run ninth inning for the White Sox, and Joba Chamberlain eventually closed the door, but not after walking the first batter he faced and putting the tying run at the plate. Now, the Tigers and White Sox are back in action tonight at 7:08 p.m. Let's see if the Tigers can ride that momentum into that game. An Angel slugger, Albert Pujols, he became just the third youngest player to join the 500 home run club, belting 2 in a 7-2 win over the Washington Nationals. Now, Pujols is the first player in MLB history to hit nos, numbers 499 and 500. That's unbelievable. In the same game, the first player ever to do that, number 499 and 500, same game he does it. He is already had 8 this season, tops the majors after hitting just 17 in an injury-plagued campaign last season. So he is off to a scorching start, making history. Again, hit numbers 499 and 500, the third youngest player to join the 500 home run club in a 7-2 win over the Washington Nats. Congrats to Albert Pujols. He is one unbelievable talent and also one unbelievable player. So definitely saw that coming. All right, Lions defensive tackle Ndamukong Suh, he continues to be absent from voluntary camps after skipping voluntary conditioning sessions earlier this month. Suh was once again nowhere to be found as the Lions opened up the first voluntary minicamp of Jim Caldwell's tenure. Now, the camp is mostly an opportunity for players to get acquainted with new coaching staff, and Sue's teammates don't seem overly concerned about his absence. Now, this is from defensive captain Stephen Tulla, who said, quote, "I mean, we all would like him to be here. Yes, obviously, it's Sue. But we know Sue's going to be ready when he's here. And at the end of the day, it gives guys that don't get as much playing time opportunities to get more playing time and to get more familiar with the defense. I know for a fact when Sue gets here, he'll be ready to play," end quote. That's from defensive captain Stephen Tulloch on the absence of Suh. Again, Suh will not be in camp right now. Again, he is, you know, when you talk about these new contract negotiations and that of Suh right now, it's nothing is set in stone right now. Talks are still on the board. They seem to be, well, at least the reports have come out that they are productive, but him not being in camp leads me to think the other way. So we'll talk about that as well, Suh not being in camp. And also, the NFL is releasing its schedule for all of for every team in the NFL. The NFL announced that the 2014 schedule will be released today at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The matchups have been known since the end of last season, but they were not dated until this point. And I believe they will even be broadcast tonight at 8 p.m. I mean, who really wants to? I mean, we're like months away from the NFL season. Who really wants to sit down and wait for the NFL to, who will watch that? I'm really intrigued about that. Who will watch the NFL release its schedule at 8 p.m.? I mean, is it that important? The NHL playoffs are going on. You got the NBA playoffs going on. You got baseball going on. And the NFL is broadcasting a schedule release. I bet you half of the nation is going to watch this, though. Probably more than half. I mean, the NFL runs the world, but that really just blows my mind. I tell you, the NFL, if there's an opportunity to draw some attention to its sport, they definitely take advantage of it, because I'm pretty sure that many, many folks will be watching that tonight at 8 p.m. over the NBA playoffs, over the NHL playoffs, and certainly over baseball. So, that's crazy stuff to me. All right, and the Detroit Pistons, they announced today that they have agreed to a multi-year radio agreement with Greater Media Detroit, also known as Detroit's Detroit Sports 105.1 FM WMGC. Of course, Rico Beard, friend of the show, he's been on here before. He is the weekend guy for Detroit Sports Radio. But 105.1 will serve as the flagship station for the Pistons radio network, starting with the 2014-15 season. So that's interesting there. And to close out our headliners, interesting news here. Floyd Mayweather Jr. and longtime girlfriend and fiance Chantel Jackson, they have officially split. And Mayweather, it actually came out, I don't know if you guys know, but Mayweather is preparing to face Marcos Maidana on May 3rd in Las Vegas. Should be an interesting fight. Maidana is no fighter to walk over, I tell you that. So they have like this all-access show being broadcast on Showtime. Mayweather, you know, revealed that him and Chantel are no longer together, saying, quote, "You always want a strong, beautiful woman that you can share your everything with. But I have to go my separate way. She's focusing on her career in L.A., which is acting, and I'm focusing on my career, which is boxing." Now, Mayweather's engagement to Jackson became public before his September 2011 victory against Victor Ortiz, but the couple never formally planned a wedding. So there you have that. Not a love story there. All right, well, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and give your thoughts on any of those and so much more, you can call in at 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527 and share anything that's on your mind. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and even tweet me at Al Martin WKAR. Also remind you all that Current Sports TV, that's right, we tape tonight each and every Wednesday night. And tonight at 6 p.m., I'll be sitting down with the now former editor of the MSU Alumni Magazine, Bob Bow. Yes, Bob was actually on the radio show last week. He's such a great, great guy who's covered everything from MSU football to MSU basketball, both men's and women's. He's done it all when it comes to sports coverage around here and so much more. Has stories for days, I tell you. And he's, again, above all, he's such a classy, good guy. You can catch my sit-down with him tonight. If you want to be a part of this live studio audience, you can do so by signing up online for free at WKAR.org. Should be a great, great time. All right, well, let's shift gears here now as Matt Luckey and Alex Sharg now join me. Happy Wednesday, fellas. How you guys doing?
Happy Wednesday. It's that time of year where it's towards the end of the school semester, and after the Wings last night, which we'll talk about.
Yeah, you're on very mellow. You got to be losing your mind right now. Finals next week, right?
Do you hear how mellow my voice is, Al?
Yeah.
I mean, with the finals, the Wings getting shut out and blanked and getting poured on. It just was a somber night.
Yeah, you sound depressed.
Yeah,
you sound depressed.
I mean, every Red Wing fan right now is depressed after that game.
Yeah. All right, Matt, how you doing, man?
I'm doing all right.
Matt sounds chipper. Come on.
You know, I don't have the weight of finals bearing down on me.
That is true.
So I'm free of that burden.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, let's talk about it. Red Wings and Bruins. The Wings. The Bruins looked like the Boston Bruins last night. I tell you, an impressive outing for Boston last night. They took full advantage of Detroit's mistakes. Actually, that second goal really got me, guys. A line change going on. Right as the line change happens, boom. Boston, they extend their lead 2-0 in that one. Oh, boy, I tell you, 3-0 win for Boston over the Red Wings now. A 2-1 series lead for the Bruins as the series moves on. Oh, boy, I tell you, when you look at this too, guys, yesterday I kind of talked about it. Again, for me, taking advantage of opportunities is really, really big with me. And there were no power play goals again. Three opportunities, 3-4 Boston and 3-4 Detroit. And, you know, you look at that, it was a key moment for me watching that game. A 5-on-3 power play for 35 seconds midway through the second period. The Wings could do nothing. And then they had a power play midway through the third period. Only got one shot on Tuukka Rask. And you just kind of saw things just really slip out of the Red Wings' hand after that. And, you know, by that third period, you know, you're seeing that shutout as Boston extended that lead to 3-0. You just felt as though this it was over at that point, you know. And the Red Wings, again, taking advantage of opportunities were big for me, and they couldn't. No power play goals on three opportunities. They had three for Boston. Boston capitalized on one of those opportunities. And I really think injuries now for the Red Wings certainly are starting to rear their ugly head. And they could definitely, you know, just really salvage some momentum if they had, you know, one of his top fours and Daniel Alfredson back, who is out, of course, with his back ailment. Zetterberg, Eriksson still out. If they had those guys back, I think this would be – I mean, last night's game I think would have been more of a challenge for Boston, but having those guys out, it does not help, seeing as now, you know, how Boston came out the gates yesterday.
It certainly doesn't help. But at the end of the day, Al, the opportunities weren't there with shooting. From the dumping chases to passing down the ice and moving into the neutral zone, they just look scared. And a lot of our students that help with the show were talking about it outside on the other side of the glass, but the Red Wings just looked like a totally different team last night. So for me, if it's the chemistry with Alfredson and some of the other guys, for them being out, I don't think that should have anything to do with them not taking advantage of opportunities. I mean, you said it, the line change, not just a line change, but a rebound again off a line change. So he gets a breakaway off a line change, Howard saves it, but they still can't get back in time to stop the second guy trailing for him to get a tip in and score.
Yeah,
and I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, and I just think that that was just a coaching mistake. That was just a mental blunder from Detroit. Just one of its multiple mistakes last night. Matt?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, we talked about the Red Wings taking advantage of opportunities they're given. I mean, honestly, first and foremost, I think I'd be worried about shoring up the opportunities you're giving the Bruins, because they are the top team in the league for a reason. They take advantage when they're given these opportunities, and they took advantage last night. I mean, you basically hand them two goals. The first one, Howard, you got to make that save.
You do.
I mean, and those are the things that kill you in the playoffs. It's not so much that a goalie has to be spectacular, just an absolute brick wall, but when you let in a gimme, it gets to you a little bit. It gets to your team. It gets to the other team thinking, hey, we can beat this guy even with just average shots. So I think that is a bad sign to start a game when you let in an easy one. And you can't dig yourself a hole against the Bruins. They are going to pound you. And that's exactly what they did last night. I mean, the line change is a disaster in and of itself. But when you're playing a team of this caliber, when you're playing anybody in the playoffs, you have to limit your own mistakes. And they did not do that at all. They were everywhere. I mean, 8 giveaways to 1 for the Bruins. You're not going to win many games like that.
No, not at all. And, you know, looking at last night, Bruins were certainly – they were definitely the aggressor last night. More shots on goal in the first and third period. 11-4 in the first. I mean, that's just total dominance in that first period to come out the gates. And it just seems as though when the Wings just hit the ice from the very start of that game – on, you know, you got to set the tone now. And the playoffs is all about setting the tone from the beginning. And the Detroit Red Wings did not do that. Boston kind of smelled, you know, blood in the water, and it just went on from there. And, you know, right now, after they had that, you know, 2-0 lead, it became kind of a dull game sitting there watching it after that. I mean, Boston just seemed in complete control.
Right, and when you're the road team and you score the first two goals of the game, that's probably the best way possible to take the crowd out of it.
Oh, yeah.
And kind of, you know,
right.
it was just sort of a dead atmosphere in there.
It was.
And you know, that's going to happen if you can't play some hockey in the first period. 11-4 in the first period is not a way to start a game, any game,
no,
let alone in the playoffs, and probably the pivotal game of the series, because Game 3 is obviously a huge game in terms of control of the series. Now Boston has home ice again.
Right, right. Yeah.
I'm not going to say it's over, because I think there's one more turn in the series, but if the Red Wings can't figure out a way to beat Rask,
mm-hmm,
they're going to be going home pretty quick.
And Rask was outstanding last night, guys.
Well,
I mean,
best goalie in the world.
Yeah, it was
really
unbelievable. Shutout for him. And, you know, I think right now, like you said, man, I think the yellow light is on right now. Definitely when you give Boston now has, you know, their first lead of the series. I mean, this is the team that everybody's projecting to win the whole thing here, certainly to come out the East. And when they have a lead now in a series in the playoffs, you definitely got to, you know, fine-tune your mentality here and just get ready mentally. And like I said, I think it's a mental thing with the Red Wings. If they would have came out, I believe if they came out last night, you know, as just more aggressive and more assertive in their game, I think you could have seen – I don't know if they would have won, but I think you would have seen a much better result at the end of the day. Not a shutout, I don't think. and just aggressiveness from the get-go. The way they come out the game and set the tone of that game, the next game, and moving forward, is going to say a lot about the team and where they are at mentally, especially with them being so young. We got to remember here, this is a young squad, a lot of players on here playing in their first playoff series, and not a lot of playoff experience here. That can definitely rear its ugly head, too, when you're playing a team like Boston. I think that's what we started to see last night. Is it over? I don't think so. I still think Boston's going to win, though. But right now, that yellow light is alive and blinking as we speak. So, all right, if you want to call in and give your thoughts on the Wings and Bruins and anything that's on your mind, again, our phone lines are open right now, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. All right, well, let's talk a little Lions right here. Of course, the biggest story right now is concerning, of course, Ndamukong Suh. This story, I actually saw this in the paper yesterday. As soon as we got off the air, I saw it in the newspaper that Lions defensive tackle Ndamukong Suh is absent from voluntary camps right now. He skipped voluntary conditioning sessions earlier this month. Suh, once again, nowhere to be found as they opened up their first voluntary mini camp of Jim Caldwell's tenure. And, you know, we talked about this last season with as it came to an end for the Lions, on what kind of contract Suh would get, what kind of offer the Lions would throw out to see if he would catch on to. And, you know, I keep hearing these reports left and right from different sources saying that there's a lot of negotiations right now on a new contract and that they're going well and that they are productive. But seeing that Ndamukong Suh is absent from these voluntary being the key word here, voluntary camps and voluntary mini-camp workouts, that leads me to kind of sway the other way and think a little bit differently here. The last thing the Lions need, in my perspective, guys, the last thing they need is a distraction right now on the heels of a new coaching tenure in Jim Caldwell. And, you know, I think this is becoming a bigger story than many Lions fans would like it to, because as a Lions fan, you don't want to hear about Ndamukong Suh missing camp. You want to hear about the progression of the team, how they're doing as far as chemistry goes. You want to hear about the new coaching staff, new personnel. You want to hear things that are productive as far as on the field goes. And now that Suh, being such the big name that he is and seeing that he's missing camp, this becomes another distraction, another unneeded distraction for a ball club that's trying to get on the right track. It's not good. And to be honest, I don't know what I'm interested to see what kind of contract that, you know, the Lions are going to offer Ndamukong Suh to see if he bites on it. But right now, the Lions just don't need this right now, guys.
Absolutely. And this is the first time this has happened to a defensive tackle missing camp. There have been some other big defensive tackles in the league in the past that have missed camp, have caused some distractions for teams, some with off the field issues. They definitely don't need it. But so that's the first thing. And I totally agree with you. That's totally a distraction. But what I want to get at you guys is, with Suh missing camp, and with his antics on the field, with his anger with stomping players and the fines and the tackles with the rough helmet throwdowns to the field, do you think that he that teams are desiring him even with him missing camp and his off the field issues? Because this is what's talked about. I mean, with him missing camp, with his contract almost being up, the talk of the town is if he's going to be back next year. Aside from just missing camp. So, Do you guys think that a team will desire to have a guy like this? Do you think that's a turnoff?
Man, I'll let you lead that one up.
Well, I think it certainly doesn't help his value on the free agent market. But at the same time, there will always be one team that will make a big push for him. I mean, let's say you're the Jaguars GM. You're going to take Suh no matter what. I mean, he is an elite defensive player, one of the best D-tackles in the league. I don't care what he does off the field as long as he's not getting arrested, which, again, this is progress from, what, two seasons ago? I mean, at least he's not in, you know, police reports or anything.
Right, exactly.
He's just
right.
Not coming to camp.
Don't need more of those.
It certainly doesn't bode well for his free agent stock because it's definitely a red flag. But I think, you know, there's always going to be one team willing to pony up and pay him the big bucks no matter what he's doing in terms of camp.
Yeah, I agree, because you're talking about Ndamukong Suh. I mean, he is a force when he's out there on the field, whether you like him or not. I mean, you talk about the fires, Alex. I mean, dating all the way back with the taunting, roughing the passer, the low blocks, the striking, kicking, the knee, and all that kind of stuff. But in a way, I mean, like I've gone on record to say I kind of like that stuff from Ndamukong Suh, because if anything, it brought an identity to the Lions that, you know, a kind of identity that says, hey, You're not going to mess with us. You're not just going to just walk all over us. It brought a sort of toughness that I liked. And Ndamukong Suh is a physical just specimen. I mean, he's huge. He's fast. I mean, he's unbelievable. He's a Pro Bowler. He's an unbelievable player. So there are teams out there that would definitely love to have Ndamukong Suh on their roster. Now, what it comes down to here, well, I think for Ndamukong Suh, which is the reason why he's holding out right now, why he's not at camp, is because it's all about money at the end of the day. Ndamukong Suh wants a contract that validates his play on the field, and he feels as though he's one of the best players in the NFL, which I do agree with, and he wants his paycheck to reflect that. And that's why right now we're starting to see this cat and mouse back and forth type of game where Suh and the Lions have not come to an agreement as to, you know, his status of the team moving forward. If something doesn't get done, if the Lions don't give him the contract that he wants, oh, you better believe that he will be rocking somebody else's jersey in the next 2 years.
Now, I've got to ask you guys this, because Suh, year by year, since 2010 with him on the Lions, I'm looking at his statistics right now, when you compare him to the rest of the NFL, as much as he is a dominant player, his physical specimen, he's a freak. You remember in college, just completely dominant at Nebraska. But when it comes to him earning the dollars with his statistics on the field, I personally am not seeing it. He doesn't rank in the top 40 in sacks. He doesn't rank in the top 40 in tackles. Granted, he's a defensive tackle, but I just don't think he has enough numbers to grant that top dollar money. Aside from his off-the-field issues with missing camp and his on-the-field issues with his stomping and his rough tackling. So from on the other side of it, guys, I think as much as one team might take a splash on him, I don't think he'll get the same amount of value as he would in Detroit. And I feel like the Lions will play to that. What do you think about? Do you think that the Lions might play to that advantage with, hey, your numbers really aren't top quality. You're not the top five in sacks. You're not the top five in forced fumbles. You're not as dominant statistically as your physical specimens are.
Well, you know, I always go, if you look at last season, of course, Ndamukong Suh, I mean, he did not have the amount of production that we had seen in 2012,
right.
2011,
and he's 27. Is this a steep down for him?
But I think last season, you know, every year, I mean, I feel as though every year you just see certain years with certain players, they just don't have it. They don't have the amount of production that they had in years past. I think, and last year's being such an odd year for just the overall team in general. You know, having those playoff expectations and to not meet those expectations and to see all these question marks in the secondary. And the Lions were a weird team last season for me, and it was just an overall weird season for me looking at that squad.
Yeah.
And we've seen Ndamukong Suh what he can be looking back at 2012 and 2011, when his rookie season. I mean, he was unbelievable. And I just think last year was one of those years that you just chalk up and say, okay, I'll be back. You know what I mean? I've seen the potential of how good Suh can be, and I'm not putting so much stock into how he performed last year. That's just me talking, though.
Yeah, I think also it's just incredibly difficult to judge a defensive tackle based solely on stats, just because of the nature of the position. I mean, he is a roadblock basically for offenses now. I mean, you're not going to see defensive tackles usually leading the league in sacks anyway. And he still is the number one guy that opposing offenses have to plan for when they have to play Detroit.
Right.
I mean, he is number one on the list of guys we have to contain,
right,
or he will kill us. So I still think his value isn't going to be hurt just because he doesn't have the sack numbers that he might have had in his rookie year. He's still that dominant force on the defensive line. I mean, Willie Young just got, what, $4 million a year? He can thank Ndamukong Suh for a lot of that, because the only reason he was even making plays is because Lions have to focus, or opposing teams have to focus so much of their attention on the interior of the line that the ends can come through and make plays. I mean, it's the nature of the scheme last year even was for the tackles in the middle to just muck things up while the ends can come out from the edge and make plays. So I think judging him solely on stats is a little short-sighted. I do think maybe that the Lions will try and maybe they will play that card in the negotiations and say, hey, maybe your value isn't as much as you think it is. maybe we can get you for this number instead of, you know, what he'd be worth on the free agent market. And but there's always an owner like Dan Snyder for the Redskins who's going to be like, hey, I'll throw $90 million your way, so you never know what's going
to
happen.
Right, if the Lions do play that card, there's going to be other teams that they are willing to pay him more money, without a doubt. And I agree with you, Matt, on that one, because, when you have such a dominant outing that he had coming out of college into the NFL, I mean, he was a force, unbelievable force. Teams start to key in on you. The scouting report gets a little better, and that opens up opportunities for other players like a Nick Fairley and Willie Young to you know, have their shine in a way. So, yeah, I agree, though.
Yeah, and then, guys, just to cap this off, look at a guy like Cliff Averill. I mean, man, from Mr. Irrelevant all the way to being a dominant player in the league, debatably better than what Sue's produced statistically, aside from a physical frame. I mean, that's a perfect example. I mean, Averill wanted the top dollar. Detroit didn't want to give it to him. He goes. So at the other side of it, it's like, okay, Sue, as much as, yeah, his numbers aren't there, and like you said, he's just dominant, and teams might take a chance on him. They're going to have to weigh that once again, and I'm very interested to see what happens with when Ndamukong Suh is done for next year.
Yeah, I just don't want it to become a huge distraction.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is the locker room dynamics as a result of this, because he wanted to be a captain last year. He's probably going to campaign for it again, but how does it look that the highest paid player on the defense and maybe the captain of the defense doesn't show up for team workouts? I mean, that's something that a leader would do. He would be there. I mean, because this is a bonus camp. Only teams who have new coaches are having camps right now. That's why the Lions are one of them.
Right.
So I think, you know, to miss that opportunity to get to know the coaching staff, you know, ingrain yourself in the new culture of the team, to miss that is huge.
It is.
Going forward, I don't know if players would be so willing to follow him knowing that this is how it started. I mean, I think that might hang over the head of this season. Maybe not. I mean, you know, he comes out in week one and gets four sacks and it's all
forgiven. Right, it could go out the window. Right. Yeah, that could go out the window.
But at the same time, I could maybe see it playing a role in the narrative of the season.
I agree. And this story is just kind of a clear reminder that at the end of the day, the NFL and other professional leagues, it's a business at the end of the day. It's all about money. You know what I mean? And, you know, we'll see what happens. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527 if you want to give any of your thoughts on this. When we come back, we'll have Barbershop Wednesday. Is the D-League, the developmental league that the NBA has established, is it hurting the game of basketball? Don't go anywhere. Current Sports returns in just a sec. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, joined by Alex Sharg and Matt Lucky. I want to remind you all again that you can be a part of Current Sports TV tonight as I sit down with Bob Bow, who is the former, now former, editor of the MSU Alumni Magazine, who has covered sports year in and year out with the MSU Alumni Magazine. You don't want to miss that sit down. If you want to be a part of that live studio audience tonight at 6 o'clock, you can do so by signing up online at WKAR.org. Well, it is Wednesday, and each and every Wednesday here on Current Sports, we debate an interesting sports topic that, you know, goes beyond the X's and O's. You hear us say that all the time here on the show. And, you know, every time you walk into the barbershop, you always hear a debate in sports going on. Everybody thinks they're the next, you know, Skip Bayless or, you know, Stephen A. or something like that in the barbershop. And, you know, we're going to debate today on whether or not the D-League, the NBA's D-League, developmental league, is hurting basketball. Well, you know, this is an interesting discussion here, guys, because we've heard Tom Izzo in numerous press conferences come out and, you know, talk about, you know, what's wrong with the game of basketball today. Actually, in his year-end presser, you know, he addressed the D-League and the NBA and, you know, kids, you know, the one-and-done system overall. And, you know, it's a very interesting discussion because we've seen so many players countless times, you know, try to make that leap from college hoops, to the NBA, and just their style of play doesn't acclimate them to the game, and you see them riding the bench. They may not be getting the minutes that they want. And we've seen multiple players go from, you know, making that leap from college to the NBA, realizing that, you know, maybe they need to go work on the game a little bit more and go to the developmental league start back from scratch. Well, not from scratch, but, you know, get back to the roots of their game, fine-tune some things, add some things here and there to the game, and then end up having a lot of success on their second go-around in the NBA. Cats like Jeremy Lin, Matt Barnes, Damian Lillard. I mean, we've seen it multiple times. But the question we're putting here on the table is, does this hurt the game of basketball in any way? And, for me, guys, I can see both sides of the spectrum here. But for me, I'm gonna take the other end because I do think it does hurt the college game in a few ways here. For me, I think when you look in Tom Izzo, you know, he addressed this in his we'll play this tomorrow because we don't have the bite today. We'll play it tomorrow on when he talks about the developmental league and his thoughts on it. And he kind of attacked it from this aspect. When you have kids in college who in a system such as Michigan State University, especially Tom Izzo's system, where we're used to seeing players who come to Michigan State stay 4 years, stay their entire tenure or at least 3 years, and then go on. Now, there are those rare cases like a Gary Harris, the exceptional talent, Shannon Brown, Zach Randolph. We've seen players come here and stay a year or two and then move on and leave. But historically, we all know that Michigan State is a program that breeds four-year players to go to the NBA. Now, with the developmental league, looking at statistics over the past 3 to 4 years that the developmental league has been established, you start to see more and more players acclimate to the whole one-and-done or two-and-done rule because they know that the developmental league is there as kind of a safety net if success doesn't come right away in the NBA. This hurts the college game in a few ways, guys, I think. I'm all for it. I think the developmental league is definitely a shining light for players to fine-tune their game more and have that second go-around and could possibly, you know, become big impacts years down the road in the league. I think it's great in that regard, but I always say to myself, why not do that in college? College basketball is a great form to do that. And also, when you talk about them possibly going back to the NBA, I mean, as far as draft stocks go and whatnot, you get more exposure in the college game with the NCAA tournament. It all depends on also the conference that you play in. And the overall development of a player that is trying to go to the NBA, what better place to develop your game in basketball, but not only in that regard, but also as a human being, what better place to do that than in college? Learning responsibility on the court and off it, possibly playing for a coach, an outstanding coach who is known for breeding not just great players, but great men. Playing for a coach like Tom Izzo, I mean, there's so many advantages to staying and developing your game in the college game as opposed to staying 1 year in college, which 1 year only does you, I mean, it really does you nothing, you know, if you stay 1 year in college. And then as far as your overall development goes as a person and a player, now granted, there are those rare cases like a Jabari Parker where you're ready, but the development of a person comes a lot. I always said, I came to Michigan State as a boy, but I left as a man after those 4 years being here because I learned so much more that stemmed way beyond just your overall social atmosphere, you know, here at Michigan State University. So as far as the development of a player in person, I don't know why I would just like to see players stay more time in college if they feel as though they're not 100% ready, rather than taking that risk and having one-and-done players who don't solidify in the NBA game.
I can see it. I can definitely see that side of it. At the same time, a lot of these players who are, you know, considered one and done or two and done prospects are going to college to play basketball. They're not going to college to get an education. Well, let's not kid ourselves. Number one on the list is basketball. That is the future that they see for themselves. That is a future that has been laid out for them. So I guess I would argue, you know, wouldn't it be better to get preparation for a life potentially in the NBA by playing semi-professional basketball? I understand that the exposure is not as good, obviously, but let's say you go to college for 1 year. I mean, are you really doing yourself any favors by going to classes that you don't want to go to or skipping those classes, you know, not really taking your academics seriously? Wouldn't you be better served by being able to work on your game full time and getting paid to do it? Now, on the other hand, they're not getting paid a lot.
Right.
The average D-League salary is anywhere from $13,000 to $25,000 a year. So it's not like they're rolling in the dough.
Mm-mm.
It's not a very, you know, lucrative field. But at the same time, you always have the opportunity to get called up to the NBA. I mean, you're already in the system. So I guess you're ingraining yourself. You're getting to work full-time on your game. And at the same time, you're getting used to kind of the travel aspect of the NBA. You're getting used to playing professional basketball at a lower level.
You know, I think eventually it could get to the point where, you know, bolting off of those points you just made, Matt, I think the college game right now is scared that the NBA Developmental League could possibly eliminate a lot of the producing talent in its game. And I think they're kind of on their heels now in that regard. Alex?
Yeah, a couple things to bring up. First of all, when it comes to the actual D-League for the one-and-dones, look at juniors in hockey. Some people will skip college hockey to play juniors to enrich themselves in a full experience that they would get in an actual pro team without classes, without some of the duties in college, without some of the meetings for our clubs, without all that. So that's where I see where Matt's coming from, in that having a D-League would enrich you in a pre-professional experience without any of the outside kind of distractions. And as much as college is far from a distraction, we're all college educated, including Aaron behind here. We know what college can do for someone, and we're not knocking Michigan State in any way. But what I'm saying is, Matt even said it, they're there to play basketball. That's first on their mind. And the same thing with those hockey players that want to play in the NHL. You play juniors instead of coming to college, and then you see if it works out. So what I'm predicting, before you go on, is that if there's any change in the future, like you said, about maybe taking some of those college athletes away from that experience and maybe the D-League taking over in a way in the future, I can see that happening in the same kind of aspect that junior hockey is.
Yeah, I can see I can see that comparison. But, you know, the thing is, when you look at these players who decide to go one and done, and if they don't pan out, go to the D-League, if you look at just the percentage of players who go one and done or two and done, and looking at the stats, there's, you know, the NBA is such a vast array and a big forum that, looking at the players, the amount of players who do make that leap, a lot of them, most of them don't pan out. Only about 25% of them have elite success and going to have longevity in the NBA, which goes back to the personnel development of an overall person in college. You gotta have a plan B.
Do you think that's development? Because I think that's just lucky because of injuries, because of off the court issues.
What do you mean?
I wouldn't look at the statistic that out of those elite players that jump, the reason that only 25% make it is because they don't have that college education.
No. If you got that message, that was wrong. Then if that 25%. Only 25% going to have a career that lasts more than 5 years. Longevity, long-lasting paycheck, which goes back to my point. That is, you got to have a plan B here. You know what I mean? And what better to massage that plan B than in college? You know, get some credits, get a degree while you're still working at your what you came to college for, the game of basketball, doing it at a Division I school, playing for an unbelievable coach, and honing your craft by also keep it in the back of your head that, hey, the NBA and those who have success and going to have year-to-year success in the NBA, those percentages aren't always in your favor. You got to be lucky sometimes in the NBA. How many times have we seen players go in their first year in the NBA, get an ACL injury, and end up, you know, their career's done right after that? You know what I mean? A guy like a Mateen Cleaves, you know, who goes to the NBA, you know, just can't pan out, ends up having an injury, and then boom, what's your plan B? You know what I mean? Now, Mateen is fortunate enough to have a very, very good broadcasting career, but you always got to be thinking in the back of your head about what's best for me as a person in the long run. And that's what kids are nowadays so short-term in success. I want to go to the NBA. I want to make lots of money, and I want to play for years and years and years. That Cinderella story doesn't work out for more than 80% of the players out there.
You're right. As my grandfather always says, you need an ace in the hole. You need that backup plan. What that ace in the hole is for many NBA players is, how about European leagues? How about playing overseas? I think it's there.
And that too. I could see that
too. I wouldn't say that the D-League is the end-all, be-all, especially with the pay. There are players, Michigan State alumni. We can talk about Raymar Morgan, who's making a great career overseas, making considerable cash flow. and is planning to do that for 5 to 10 years. So I think that there's a lot to this. I'd love to continue this conversation.
We definitely could. All right, guys, really quick before we only have 10 minutes left, let's get to Mark D'Antonio. I actually went out to practice the other day. The spring game, of course, is this Saturday at 2 p.m. Here's Mark D'Antonio addressing the state of his team and what they've been working on throughout spring practice.
We're sort of rounding the turn, so every one of these practices are big. We're trying to get something done on them. Scrimmage on Saturday, you know, came down to really the last play of the scrimmage, really. You know, Connor Cook put it right on DeAnthony at the end of the in a two-minute situation, and Nick Hill had to score for a touchdown. I thought they saw a lot of good things, but consistency continues to be an issue, you know, because when you're looking at both sides of the ball, I think you're always looking for who's going to win it. So I'll take some questions.
The one to DeAnthony, was that the long one down the left sideline?
Yeah.
Who have you been most pleasantly surprised with this spring, Mark?
I really think DeAnthony Arnett. I mean, that guy's, he's caught the ball very well. He's making good runs after catches. He's playing aggressively. And he's a guy that needed to do those things. He needed to show more consistency. I also think R.J. Shelton has moved forward. I mean, there's a lot of guys that have moved forward, but, you know, R.J.'s a guy that makes plays out there every scrimmage and every practice. And you know, some of our other good players remain good players. But I think those two guys have shown that, you know, they've come a little farther than they were in the fall.
Put guys in situations where you want to see them versus just actually playing it out versus the games?
Well, we actually played it out. It just so happens that every time we play it out, it gets close. Now, I guess they sort of say I rig it, but I don't really think that I do. It just sort of seems to happen like that. I mean, really the defense was ahead of the offense. Riley Bulla had a pick for a touchdown. Curtis Drummond had a real nice interception. So that put them up to 37 points, and you know, it just sort of happened the way it did, you know. But you know, I had a couple big plays by our offense, and they got back into it.
What are you seeing from Riley? Is he making big strides to move back to defense?
You know, Riley's moved back to defense. He's working at the you know, the strong side linebacker rather than the middle linebacker, which is where he was working when he was a linebacker. He missed you know, he missed all of camp last year, so there's a transition, but he plays extremely hard. He makes plays, but you know, he's a young player, so consistency is the issue, because he's seen a lot of different things, formations, adjustments, and those type of things. And you know, obviously, when you put together different defenses, you know, things start to add up, and so you've got to be able to play things out.
Who's going
to
compete with Ed for that spot when he comes back in the fall? I mean, I guess Ed's probably still in the mix of somebody you'll look at in the fall, right?
Yeah. Ed will come into the fall as our number one backer at that position, and you know, he's active. He's got a lot of the physical abilities like Nikos Allen had. He really runs well, does those type of things. So he'll come in number one. At least that's in my mind right now, in our minds right now. As far as you know, the other linebacker position, you know, it really sort of remains to be seen. We can move Taiwan out there. We can move Darian out there. We can play with those three, where somebody can unseat them, but. We've got good young players, but they're young, so every rep is important for them.
Did Hicks hold his spot at the corner? I know you said he was a little nicked up. Did he even go? Or?
He did not go. Okay. He did not go. So, you know, yeah, he's still number one at the corner because you're not going to lose it based on an injury, but he did not go.
Could you fill us in on any depth chart changes on either side of the ball, please?
That could be pretty deep. You know.
We've got a week to see you again.
In the two deep? You know, we got a lot of wide outs who I would consider have the ability to play in the two deep right now because guys are nicked up, you know, at the corner position. You know, Justin Williams worked at the number two corner, but we've got some corners out. So, you know, we've got guys with hamstrings or whatever that are nursing them. So we've got some different guys doing different things. You know, the two deep, you know, sort of remains constant, I would say. They're one's one day and two's another.
Did Keeler make a move? I know you were talking about him maybe pushing Cruz. Where's that at? Where's that stand?
I think Cody is still number two. Connor Cruz has had a good spring. He's a senior. He can play a variety of positions. But Cody Keeler's had a great spring. I think he's a guy that is solid in that sixth position. Could play either guard or tackle, or you could move somebody else to guard or tackle. But he, you know, I think he could play any place on the right side of the ball, and the other guys can go to the left side if they need it.
Who are you looking at as your return guys? I know that it's still early, but you have a few guys back there catching punts before kicks.
Yeah. You know, R.J. Shelton, we're looking at him back there. And, you know, Nick Hill. You know, McGarrett Kings right now is out. You guys probably know that, but he's out. So, but, you know, we'll see how he shakes out in the fall.
King's out the rest of the spring then?
Yeah, King's out the rest of the spring. Yep. Okay. Figured you guys knew that.
Well, we can't write what we see. You have to tell us. That's one of the rules that come in.
That's good. That's a good rule. We'll leave it like that then. Any more questions?
Marcus, would you assume right now that the starting five is pretty solid on the offensive line?
I would say it's solid, with the exception that Cody is one of those guys. He can push because he's got great athletic ability and his size and speed for the position.
So either a Donovan or a Cruz, he could push?
He could push. Well, he can push those guys.
I know Dane's talked about, you know, maybe not using Jeremy quite as much, and he's talked about the number two. Are Holmes and Hill, would those kind of be the other two guys getting carries if you started the season tomorrow?
I think Delton Williams is in there, but he's out right now because of his shoulder surgery at the end of the season. But he's in there. I think he did enough last year as a true freshman to warrant that. I also think Nick Hill's having a great spring, and Gerald Holmes is a talent. We've got a couple freshmen coming as well. But it's going to be competitive there, but it should be because that's a tailback position. We're going to give the ball to our tailbacks. So I think Lankford's had a great spring. He's heavier. He's a little heavier. And he's still extremely explosive. I think he's got a lot of good things going.
Did Damien have a better scrimmage the second one than the first one? No stats from Damien Terry. I know there were no stats from either.
Yeah, I thought he was better. I did think he was better.
Just to clarify on Kings, has he been out the whole spring, or did he get hurt early?
He's been out the whole spring.
With injury?
No.
You've had a lot of recruits around this spring. Can you just talk about the momentum off of Rose Bowl and a lot of guys around?
Yeah, we've got a lot of momentum here. The Rose Bowl obviously has supplied that, along with the Big Ten Championship. But I think it's also important that we step back and we're trying to reaffirm ourselves. I've said that over and over. And I think our football team is trying to do that. We need to do that on a consistent basis and not, you know, we can't feel that entitlement. We've got to have confidence, but it's a fine line, very fine line. So we got to work hard and keep pushing it.
And well, is that?
Mike had season-ending surgery, so he is out for the spring. So he has not punted this spring. So Tyler O'Connor has been punting, as well as Geiger. And both of those show ability. But, you know, Mike will be back. We're just holding him through the spring based on the surgery he had on his knee.
So interesting revelations right there. That's head coach Mark D'Antonio of the MSU football team as they prepare for the spring game this Saturday. Guys, I sat down with Mark last week, and you'll get to hear that interview on Friday here on WKAR Radio. It's interesting how this team is going to handle coming off a Rose Bowl win. I mean, the target is now on this team's back. Everybody knows now that this team is good. You know, they have a lot of player and personnel there. D'Antonio has sent shockwaves through the college football world, looking at what he did for the progression, especially the progression from last year's start to last year's finish. They know that MSU is dangerous now, and the way they handle success is going to be really interesting this upcoming year, guys.
Absolutely, and I think it's interesting to hear the individual battles that he described. I'm really surprised to hear about D'Anthony Arnett because there was so much hype when he came in from Tennessee, kind of got lost in the shuffle, and now he's sort of springing forward. So it's going to be interesting to see who steps up into those roles that were vacated last year, both on offense with Arnett and on defense, because, I mean,
especially defense,
stepping up for Denard, for Bulla, for Allen. I mean, all these holes are going to be filled, but if we've seen anything under the D'Antonio regime, is that they always have a guy who's ready to step up.
Right, and don't forget Pat Narduzzi, baby. Can't sleep on him. Alex?
Yeah. Big thing for me, he didn't really touch on it too much, but how about Tywan Jones and Max Bullitt leaving? Tywan Jones moving to the middle linebacker. That's going to be a big thing for me to watch because that was the anchor of the defense. And when it comes to the offensive line, with all the injuries last year, Connor Cruz making some really big moves. He was a walk-on, not even a scholarship guy.
Yeah.
So that's a big thing for me too. So.
And one last thing. Tyler O'Connor is practicing as a punter. Can you imagine the fakes that they could run?
Wow.
Tyler O'Connor throwing a 60-yard bomb out of a punt formation.
That'd be impressive.
It's coming.
It
Look
is
out
coming.
For it.
I can see that, man. We'll save this show in the pocket when it happens, okay? All right. Well, there you have it. Thanks so much to all of you for tuning in to today's Current Sports. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKRE's Lansing. As always, take care. Have a fantastic hump day. And be easy, people.